John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's on this nice, sunny Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day. And, of course, we are now at the middle of the week, and we're getting closer to Thursday night football and some Thursday night college football, you name it. Lots of stuff going on, so let's not waste any time. Let's get started with the five biggest stories of the day. The top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Just keep cleaning it up, and we have to clean up. We have potential to do a lot of cool stuff, and we just got to clean it up and get more accurate and get rid of the negatives. It's really a question of eliminating the negatives, and we have to convert on third down.
And that's true. There's no question. I mean, those are some of the things that have to get fixed up. And what you wonder about, as Pete Carroll talks about, can it get worse? I don't know if it can. I think it's off to a pretty bad start right now. So many young players, so much confusion, not getting the running game going. I mean, really, what, 38 carries in 2 weeks? I mean, you have 38 carries sometimes in one game, not 2 weeks. And then running backs not getting what they need as far as the attempts and mistakes by Russell Wilson, all those different things. And, you know, he's right. The third down situation has been bad. It's one that has to get fixed. It's something that they need to do. And what you wonder about is that I still don't know the mystery and how to answer the mystery of Chris Carson. Because Chris Carson, say what you want, he's the best back on this team. He's the most complete back. He can block. He can run. He can get powerful runs. He's averaging over 4 yards a carry. Yet here it was, he was kind of a missing person after about the first quarter. And what happened to him? Now, Pete Carroll did make probably a misstatement when he said, all right, yeah, he was because of special teams, but they only had two special teams plays for him and the fatigue factor. So whatever it is, they've got to get to the bottom of it and get him out there and get running. At least Rashad Penny did some good things, and he got started. Got to get more C.J. Procise involved in the passing game. But they've got to get more runs. I think it's very simple as that. And, of course, you need, you know, not those. And I think Pete Carroll probably admitted his mistake by trying to get involved and say, hey, throw a few long passes. That didn't work out. So all those things are coming against. But now they get home, and they need to at least get some victories going because, you know, it's, what, 11% chance of making the playoffs when you get off to an 0-2 start. They can still do it, but they've got to get better in that. And, of course, that's one thing that Pete Carroll talked about was getting one voice on the offense this offseason. The one voice was Brian Schottenheimer. So Brian Schottenheimer, whether he needs to scream, yell, whatever, that one voice needs to come out. They need to get going with this offense. They need, I think, to maybe go a little bit more up-tempo, get more of the shorter passes in there. And also, I mean, you know, be a little less predictable in some of the things. I know that Prince Amukamara was talking about the you know, the team's ability, what he saw in the Denver game, to throw the ball to the running backs, and that's what allowed him to kind of jump the route, get the pick six, and went for the touchdown that basically clinched that game on Monday night. You know, they still had the ability to win that game. You saw the touchdown drive. You saw there was starting to be a little bit of momentum, and that interception just killed things, but that just can't happen. As far as the injury situation, have to wait till about 12:30 to see what Pete Carroll says about Justin Britt, going on with his shoulder, if he's going to miss some time. Got an MRI yesterday. It does look like they should get a little bit healthier. Chance that Bobby Wagner can return. There's a decent chance that they can go ahead and maybe get KJ Wright back. They won't have Doug Baldwin. May have DJ Fluker. So some of those guys may be coming back. I would imagine that Trey Flowers will probably be back. But we'll keep you updated as the day goes on injuries and what's going on with the Seahawks.
Number two.
They haven't been the same since they lost Max Unger a few years ago. They haven't been the same as an offensive line. And when you look at the pressure that was applied to him, you finally realize once again that Russell Wilson, year after year after year, is playing with smoke and mirrors and just up against a tsunami, for crying out loud. Yesterday it was Khalil Mack and Akuma. Khalil Mack, once again, absolutely spectacular. We're talking about the era from Butkus to Ditka to Singletary to Urlacher, and now we've got the Mack era. This is what it's all about right now, and we get all of that. But what you're seeing from the Seattle Seahawks is the same old, same old. A good team that's not great, because Russell Wilson has to do too much, usually running for his life.
Well, I guess Stephen A. Smith pretty much seeing what everybody else is seeing. Russell has been running for his life. The sacks continue to go, 12 in two games. And you can see the rankings right now. Some of them a little bit too harsh, some of them realistic. Currently, NFL.com put the Seahawks at 29th. Now, that's a little bit low, I think. But again, when you're 0-2, I mean, you're going to be lumped in with all the other 0-2 teams. And so 29th might be a little bit low, but you're going to be somewhere in the low 20s. According to ESPN, they have the Seahawks 24th. And that's kind of where I have them right now. Because again, you have to take into account the way they've played, the mistakes they've made, all those different things. And you know, you can't. So I have them like 24th. I know when I did my AP vote the other day. So we'll want to see where you think that they should end up being. But, you know, the big thing is, can this get worse? You'd have to think it's going to get better. You have to think that, you know, with what they found in the first two games of the regular season, that this is it. Now, is there going to give them a chance to win the NFC West? No. I don't think they're going to be able to do that. I don't think they can catch the Rams. Rams have the best team. But you would have to think that you still look at San Francisco, and they're 1-1, but they struggled, barely getting over Detroit, a team right now that's actually below Seattle, a team right now you can probably say that's 30th or so in the league, because if you look at the bottom, I start with the Buffalo Bills, and then I put the Arizona Cardinals next. And, of course, Detroit's got to be, I think, 30th at this stage with their 0-2 start. But this has been a disastrous start so far. Rams are ranked number one on just about, I think, most teams' polls because of what they've been able to do. Now, again, they've had a soft, easy schedule to kind of get going, but they rank number one. Looks like they're all set for the division. Everything else, though, in flux.
Number three.
Now the stretch and the 2-2 swing and a miss. Does he go? Yes, he does on the appeal for strike three. And the ball game is over. The Astros blank the Mariners tonight. Wow, that got me again. The Astros win it tonight. A final score of 7-0. This series is tied at 1-1 apiece.
So, Mariners, and we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Mariners lose 7-0, and they've now been officially eliminated from the American League West race. Houston now clinching that from Seattle. They still have to try to get ahead of the Oakland A's. Last I looked, the numbers, I think the magic number is 4 for the A's clinching that wild card spot away from Seattle. So that looks good. Mike Leake won 6 1/3 innings, gave up 5 runs on 5 hits, had 3 strikeouts. The Astros really just had good pitching for 5 1/3 innings. Josh James held the Mariners scoreless for 5 1/3 and struck out 7. Robinson Cano had 3, hit the Mariners 6 hits. 2 of those were doubles, but again, not enough hitting. Series is tied at 1-1, and right now it looks like Matt Festa is going to get the start tonight versus the Astros. That's according to Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. They're going to use the bullpen start, and of course, as they call it, in bullpenning, and of course, that bullpen's been going up against Dallas Keuchel for the Astros. So the Mariners lose 7-0. See if they can get a victory in this to at least get the series. And ironically, if they can do that, they've actually, because of their success down in Houston, they would have clinched the series against the Astros. 9-9 is the record right now. If they win, they'll be 10-9. If they lose, the Astros will be 10-9 against the Mariners. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number 4.
Yeah, without, you know, giving away a ton of game plan stuff. I mean, he looked good in the workout. He's healthy. We're excited to get him back. And, you know, just again, it's part of where we are, you know, with the receivers and the injuries and things of that nature. But you know, we'll work him this week and see where his role is going to be and try to get him in the mix.
All right, so it looks like Carson Wentz is going to be back. He's at least been cleared to play, and it looks like he's going to practice and, of course, be the starter. They had to make a move at wide receiver because they're very thin there. They placed Mike Wallace on injured reserve with a fractured fibula. They re-signed Jordan Matthews, who they had last year. So he's going to be back. Still don't know about Alshon Jeffery. He's still banged up. He's missed the first two games. Leonard Fournette, the running back for Jacksonville, has returned to the practice field. So he's looking like he is going to play after missing one game with a hamstring injury. It's official now. The Josh Gordon trade has been approved. And so they give up a 5th. They get a 7th rounder in return. It's a conditional 5th coming back from the Cleveland Browns. New England Patriots safety Patrick Tunt. Chung is right now finding out what the league is going to do because the NFLPA's filed a grievance saying that, hey, that concussion thing didn't get done right. And so they had to make sure. So there's going to be a little bit of a joint investigation between the NFL and the NFLPA about whether Patrick Chung was treated correctly with that concussion and concussion protocol.
Number 5.
On Friday, the Seattle City Council Select Committee on Civic Arenas approved renovations to Key Arena with a 7-0 vote, which should keep the timeline of demolishing Key Arena in December alive. Yesterday, Todd Lewicki acknowledged that they have been keeping track of the submissions to the Seattle Times team name contest, saying that he thinks the name will be revealed by the first or second quarter of next year.
So positive news, the city council and the select committee approved the renovations of Key Arena 7-0 on Friday. So that's good. So now everything's going to be accepted. There's no appeal. So that's going to be a case. It looks like they'll start demolishing Key Arena, or at least taking things down in December. And then Todd Lewicki said that sometime in the first quarter or second quarter of next year, they're going to be able to start revealing what's going to be the name of this franchise, which, of course, now has gotten 2,000 submissions of people trying to come up with names for this hockey team. And so that's looking good. And so overall, looks like very good right now that there's going to be a hockey coming to this town, and it's going to be planned for 2020. You can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to go under further review and start to look at the offense, look at Russell Wilson, see where people are pointing their fingers. And it's a big finger right now. At least the fingers are all pointing a lot at Russell Wilson. Is that fair, unfair? We'll come back and talk about it next when we go under further review. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
So under further review, we start to take a look at what's going on right now. And boy, you talk about a big swing. Back in 2017, particularly for the first 3 months of the season, people were touting Russell Wilson as an MVP. Carrying the team, was able to get all those fourth quarter comebacks and all that. And right now, I mean, people are pointing their finger at him. They're pointing the finger at Brian Schottenheimer. I guess no longer pointing the finger at Daryl Bevel. But the concerns over the offense have people just pointing fingers. And of course, why you can see Russell Wilson probably having his maybe back to back two of the worst games he could possibly have because he's thrown the interceptions that he normally doesn't throw. He has thrown touchdown passes. He has been able to create some drives. But he's not been able to get the running game going, and he's not been able to get in any kind of a rhythm. And, of course, I mean, in some ways, I mean, that's somewhat predictable. I mean, because particularly once you saw the Doug Baldwin injury, then all of a sudden you really only have one wide receiver that was part of the mix last year, and that's T.J. Lockett. I mean, John Brown is new. Brandon Marshall is new. I mean, you can say that David Moore is kind of new because he really didn't play much last year because he was more of a practice squad guy. Keenan Reynolds is new. So he's out there now with basically five receivers, four of them, including David Moore, virtually new to him. Then you look at the tight end position. I mean, there's no Jimmy Graham. There's no Luke Wilson. Yeah, Nick Vinette's there, but he was more of a number three last year, so he didn't get many opportunities to really get out there to catch passes. And so Will Disley's now the new starter. So it's a new group there at tight end, and then you know about the offensive line problems and that. So we kind of find out where the finger's pointing the most. I know that was a discussion on Mike Salk and Brock and Salk with Danny O'Neill coming in, and here's what they had to say.
Russell is now firmly in that tax bracket. He's going to have to be more of a difference maker, and he's going to have to compensate. And like Peyton Manning was, and like Aaron Rodgers is, you have to shoulder more of that. And right now, he's not equipped to do that in the same way that those two quarterbacks were at their peak. And Tom Brady has been for the last 5-6 years, maybe even 8 years for Brady. It's been there. He's not equipped to be able to do that yet.
Might be 10.
It is.
I mean, it's been since 2007, really, that Brady has played at that level.
So you've had 10 years of Brady. And that's a pretty rare group. You're talking about three of the very best quarterbacks. And it doesn't mean Russell won't get there. He's 29. But there needs to be growth. And I think that's one of the reasons they brought in the new offensive coordinator. And maybe it's going to get a little
bit worse.
What's
funny, though, is with Peyton and with Brady, and I'm not, and mostly with Rodgers, there have been no changes, really, at least to their scheme and system. I mean, Brady's heard the same voice. It's always been Bill Belichick. I know there have been some different offensive coordinators, but it's all been part of the same tree. Whether it was Bill O'Brien or Josh McDaniels or Charlie Weiss, it's all basically been part of the same offense and the same system, with no real major changes in that relationship. With Aaron Rodgers, I mean, McCarthy's been there really for all of this, and he's been the primary voice. I know there have been some changes in play calling and stuff. I do wonder how much this change to Schottenheimer is affecting Russell.
Well, I just look at the whole change period, because it's the more changes again, not just a scheme-wise, because scheme-wise, I mean, it's different. But again, it's different in the sense that it's not what it's been built to be. It's built to be more of a running type of an offense, which hasn't happened, only 38 carries in two games. And, you know, getting into some kind of a system, and whatever it is, it's creating too many third downs. And that's where too many third and longs, and they're not converting on third downs. And, again, you can see, without Doug Baldwin, there has to be an adjustment because Doug was the main guy. Doug got the main passes. He was the number one threat. He was the number one guy, the guy that every time that Russell would throw it, consistently he was the one who's going to get it. And so now, you know, Tyler Lockett has to become number one, and he has 8 catches. I think that's fair. I mean, you want, you know, 4 catches a game or 5 catches a game. You know, you've got Brandon Marshall getting about, you know, 4 catches a game, but not as many big plays, but then he's more the possession guy. But, you know, what I noticed in the Chicago game with Doug out is that there was limited, limited ability to get separation from the cornerbacks, and that has to be a concern. But also with so many new guys, it's going to take some time. I mean, it's not going to be an overnight turn like this. And I think it's not like an overnight turn on this entire team when you see it. You know, because what you're looking at, it's still a reset. But with so many guys missing, 5 starters out, I mean, it had more of a look of a rebuild than a reset. Because now you've got so many new people out there. I mean, so many people getting their first starts. I mean, first two linebackers getting their first starts at linebacker for the Seahawks. I mean, a complete new group at linebacker. And then on offense, which obviously the offense has to carry the defense until the defense gets settled. Defensively, they did pretty well. I think they did a good job of containing Mitch Trubisky. They held him to 17 points, and really after the first two series, they did a good job of just totally shutting him down, only allowing him to basically get some short passes. They got a couple interceptions. That's encouraging, but the offense is the thing that really needs to grow, and so now they start to see what direction they're going to go. I mean, who is now going to be the running back? I mean, all along, there was never a question. It was Chris Carson. I mean, you know, Rashad Penny, you know, was going to challenge and get in there, but then he got more playing time than Carson did, and that, of course, caught everybody off guard because, again, Carson actually was running the ball pretty well. We still haven't got to the bottom of the mystery of the fatigue factor, you know, where Pete Carroll, after the game, said that Chris Carson was, you know, tired because of all the special teams plays, and he only had 2. So that's very baffling, but I'm sure a lot of these things are going to be starting to clean up this week because now, as Pete Carroll talks about, cleanup being the big word. They've got to clean up the mistakes because I think right now what you're looking at is that the Seahawks are their worst enemy because they are making too many mistakes, a few too many penalties, certainly the blunders, guys not being in the right positions. But you if they start cleaning that up, they'll be better. I think it starts with the offensive line. They got to make sure that they get some consistent run blocking. I saw one stat from ESPN that this team is in the bottom 2 or 3, not surprising, for getting that second contact, you know, breaking a tackle and getting the second contact on the running game. Well, you can see that that's going to be expected because they just haven't had any attempts. You get defenses fresh, particularly after that first game where there's only 51 plays and there was only 15 running attempts. So what do you do? And that's where Russell Wilson, I do think, has to take more control. I think that, you know, he probably does need to run a little bit more early in the game. I think he needs to start getting more up-tempo early in the game, trying to get some of the things going that usually go into the fourth quarter. You know, they've got to find a way to, you know, get things. And, of course, that's where I think home field can play a big advantage because now you can have the crowd behind you trying to at least, get some things, you know, on the positive level. But, again, they need to get going. I mean, they did some of the things you saw in the preseason. That looked encouraging. They had those drives. Now they need to get those and need to get better third down situations. That, I think, is going to be essential. All those things have to be on the plate because at this stage, this thing is slipping away very quickly. But, I mean, you can see with what is out there on the field that it would probably be predictable that would happen. Just way too many changes. And again, there's the talent there to be able to do it, but they've got to fix some things up. But it points to Russell. And again, Russell's not off to a good start. I think that's understandable, but he still has the talent to be able to get this thing right. He's still one of the top 5 or 6 quarterbacks in the league. I mean, you can see he can get the touchdown passes. He can get the plays to Will Disley. He can get the plays over to TJ Lockett. But really, it's up to him. And so now the finger pointing is there, and you're even hearing crazy things. Oh, yeah, why is he getting the $21.9 million? Why is he not going to get the contract next year or so when he starts to get into that $30 million range? No, I think that it's up to Russell to be able to do it. Hey, 14 games are left. We'll see where it goes. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to check in with Dave Wyman, as we try to do on Wednesdays. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And it's good to catch up with Dave Wyman. We'd like to try to do on Wednesdays. And so, Dave, not a good start to the season, 0-2. Offense right now, people are pointing fingers more than anything else. And so I guess we start right now. Is it? Can we get to the bottom of what happened to Chris Carson in the running game? I'm just baffled by that one, because Chris looked so good running the football. Then all of a sudden he vanished. And then Pete Carroll after the game said that was because he got so involved in special teams because of the injuries, and he only had two special teams plays. First off, your reaction to what you've seen of Chris Carson running, and then also what you saw of Rashad Penny Monday night.
Yeah, well, it's just very mysterious, like you said, John. I have no answer for that. And, and I kind of felt bad for Pete, because I think, here's what happens is you get into a game, and a lot of times, the position coach and the offensive coordinator are having a conversation, and there's lots going on. And so Pete kind of lost track of the Carson thing. And so, yeah, it was weird, because I put my binoculars on him when Penny was out there for, I don't know, it started the second quarter on, and he was standing there with his, his helmet up on the top of his head, just sort of chilling, looking like he's watching the game. So I'm not sure what went on there. We may never find out, just because there's a lot of stuff that is internal that they don't want to talk about. But, I've loved everything I've seen from Chris Carson, and I thought this week we were going to see him get into a rhythm and get 15 to 20 carries and let him get going, and we didn't. Now, I'll say this, Rashad Penny looked a lot better. He, that first game, typical rookie, he was out there, but he wasn't being himself. And I saw him start to look like maybe he was, felt like he was back at San Diego State, and that's the thing, you just get back to playing football. And so he looked better, but, and then they just became kind of predictable. They got down, and, there wasn't as much of a commitment to the run as you'd like to have seen. And I always say this, John, you go into a game with a game plan, and you have an idea of how it's going to go, and it rarely goes that way. It's a game just explodes into chaos, and just like plays, individual plays. So you just have to adapt, and this is an offense that a lot of the pieces haven't played together. You're missing Doug Baldwin, so it's going to take them a while, and they had two pretty tough defenses to face in those first opening weeks.
Mm-hmm. No question, and that was going to be a problem. How much of the finger-pointing should go to Russell Wilson, or if so, how unfair is the finger-pointing right now?
Well, I just think Russell found himself in a situation where it was like last year, where it was all on him. And I just don't think that giving him enough help. And, and look, he didn't play a great game. I mean, the pick six that he threw is just, I'm sure to him, that's inexcusable to not read that. I feel like he's, we always picture him as being inhuman. And he's like a machine out there. And there's just so much on him. And my theme has been help Russell, whether it's protection, whether it's, running game. And he didn't really get much help. So I think it was tough not having Doug out there. You also have to tip your hat to the Chicago defense. I thought what they did, John, was they covered the routes early. So even if they're playing zone, they're jumping routes because they're not worried about a second move, a wheel route from a running back, a slant and go, a stop and go, any kind of secondary moves, because they knew their pass rush was going to get there. So that's kind of what I saw, and it worked out. It was a good game plan by Chicago, and I thought Denver kind of did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And but I'll tell you the one thing is that I think there's a predictability to some of this stuff, and really you kind of felt it when you saw that Doug Baldwin was going to miss a couple weeks. And what you can see is basically you can say that four out of the five receivers that are active for the game are pretty well new to Russell Wilson. And, of course, you know, I know David Moore was here last year, but he was more of a practice squad guy than anybody was going to be on the field. And so now you're looking at Tyler Lockett being the only returning guy, you can say, that was active a lot last year. And, you know, Brandon Marshall, Jerron Brown, and of course, Keenan Reynolds, all new. And so that's a whole new group that you're trying to get used to, and it takes time.
Yeah, well, and also I think, Russell worked so much on his mechanics during the preseason and camp, and I don't think he's gotten a chance to use them just because he's thrown off his back foot. He's not able to bring his front foot down because of the pass rush. But you saw that the couple of throws that he made, I mean, my gosh, the throw to Tyler Lockett for a touchdown, I mean, that was in the tightest window that you could possibly imagine on the field. And same thing with a couple of the throws to Brandon Marshall. So I feel like he has the chemistry with Marshall and somewhat with Lockett. It's just that there just hasn't been time to get there. And then, you know, you definitely miss Doug. I mean, he is a guy that gets open early and gets that separation and just didn't have that available for Russell with that pass rush coming. So, yeah, it's just, again, like I said, I'm sure that coaches get together and they look at how a game kind of just, like I said, it explodes and how to make adjustments and where should we go back to. And, you know, and I'm hoping that the answer this week is go back to Chris Carson and try to really commit to the run, because that also gets the offensive line fired up. Those guys want, and especially the way this one is built, you got guys, well, we'll see this one, DJ Fluker's healthy, but J.R. Sweezy and Justin Britt and Jermaine Effetti, they want to maul people. They want to, you know, be tough guys and run the ball, and they've got a tough guy carrying the ball in Chris Carson. So, you know, I think that as soon as we can see that, then this team will get, you know, back on schedule and back with their timing, because the best thing for Russell is play action pass. He's the best at that in the entire NFL, but you got to run the ball in order to get that done.
Mm-hmm. No question. And then on defense, you know, certainly having a young quarterback like Mitch Trubisky, once he got off script, that helped out, because I think it allowed them to gain some confidence. And I think you can see that carry through. Austin Calitro, I thought, did a sensational job with his eight tackles, making his first start. And Akeem King did a real good job making his first career start. I mean, he only had four completions on him for 34 yards. That's not bad when you figure that, okay, you know, he's making a first start. Last week it was Trey Flowers making a first start. I mean, you have Michael Kendricks coming out there, having never really even seen the playbook, just going out there and playing as much as he did. I thought there was some encouraging things there.
Yeah, well, no kidding. And that was one of those things, like I said, going into the game, John, we all thought, oh my gosh, this defense, I mean, you know, it's going to be tough to stop. But, you know, you mentioned during the game about the script for Trubisky and the pretty well-executed offense. I mean, the way they ran that, you know, Mark Helfrich from Oregon helping him run that. And Trubisky's a very underrated runner. So, you know, that was, I think, a couple of the longest runs were Trubisky. So, but, yeah, they all played really well. And I just think it speaks to the coaching on defense, man. They are great coaches. They got Calitro ready. They got Michael Kendricks. Man, he had a really good game. So, yeah, I like what I've seen out of Calitro. There's a couple rookie mistakes in Denver with him, but he looked like he owned that position. I think he had a tackle for loss, and and Kendricks had a sack and a couple of passes broken up. So they were all over the place and really played pretty well. It was a winning effort. 271 yards that Chicago had. And anytime you hold an offense under 300, you're doing great. But, you know, they were just a couple plays away from being spectacular with, you know, getting some picks. But the way Shaquille Griffin's playing, I mean, right now they're definitely good signs, even though they're banged up on defense. Jeez, John, I was sitting there looking at my board, and there's, like, you know, Trey Flowers, Delano Hill, Bobby and KJ. Tom Johnson's not available because you had to bring back Luani, and you had to release Tom Johnson. Then he ends up getting picked up by Minnesota. So just they're in a really tough spot, and they really made the best of it.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Going back to Griffin, Shaquille Griffin, in two games, he's had eight completions on him, 15 attempts for only 62 yards, and he had had two picks on Monday night. That's a real good start. And another guy off to a very good start that never gets much attention is Justin Coleman. Justin Coleman so far in his two games, only two completions for 27 yards. You know, that's encouraging because now it's a matter of, you know, everybody settling down on the one side, whether it's going to be Trey Flowers, I would imagine, when he's healthy this week, coming back. Because you know they're going to take advantage of the youngest guy out there. But Griffin, who was the youngest guy last year, and Coleman, who was a pretty young guy, they're coming through.
Yeah, no question. Also, Shaquille Griffin, you know, the way he's going around and getting, turning his head around and going and getting the ball, that's just really encouraging. So, and also would be remiss without mentioning Bradley McDougal. My gosh, I mean, you know, it's not fair to compare him to Cam Chancellor, but the stuff he did in the run game, John, I was very impressed because it wasn't a lot of, you know, he had some tackles, certainly, and made some really good plays, but the way he controls the perimeter, the way he forces and turns everything back inside for this defense, I mean, he's one of those guys that will take on a big tight end or even an offensive lineman. So I just was very impressed by Bradley McDougal. And if you asked me to pick an MVP on the defense after two games, it would be him because he did a lot of things that you see on film that allow other players to make plays. So he's been fantastic. It's been, I think, a year of very pleasant surprises so far. But Rasheem Green, I'd mentioned him too. He had a play on a jet sweep that basically, you know, that offense was trying to separate each side of the defense where you have to stay home. There's a jet sweep one way and the possibility of an option the other, and everybody stayed home, and he made a great tackle for like probably a 4-yard gain that could have gone for like 25. So this defense, just like I said, they're very well coached. You can see they're playing that way.
And of course, it's good chatting with you, and I guess we don't get together today or not?
I'm not sure, John. I think we have a short day because the Mariners down in Houston. So if not, we'll definitely talk to you tomorrow.
All right, that sounds good. That's Dave Wyman here and joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we'll catch you up on the National Football League. When we go behind the lines, it's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
.com.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, it's Wednesday, so injuries are going to be filling the day and roster moves and all those different things as every team now gets ready, gets their practices going, and try to get ready for week three. Boy, it's been fast. We're already on the third week of the season, and so lots of maneuvering, and of course, it's been fascinating kind of watching Morris New England Patriots trying to figure out what to do with the receiver position. You know that they've been undermanned right now, and they've gone through a lot. Well, they did complete the Josh Gordon trade, even though there was a delay. Apparently, there was some problem. I don't know if it was something that Josh Gordon did, the hamstring and all that, but they finally did officially announce that Gordon is there, and at least I know he's in uniform. I think he got into uniform number 10, and they're also thinking about bringing Corey Coleman back and putting him on the practice squad. And so now you're talking about two former Cleveland Browns. And how strange would it be if the Patriots, you know, succeed because of two former Cleveland Browns? I know Coleman didn't do anything when, you know, he went to New England and then boom, he got bounced pretty quickly. And, you know, that didn't work out. And now he's a former first round pick, what, a couple years into his career as a practice squad guy. You don't see that happening. And here's Josh Gordon, a great talent who just remains an enigma. But I don't know, from what you've seen the first 2 weeks, Mora, are you impressed with how they've survived with a 1-1 record with as many problems at wide receiver?
Yes, especially last week because the defense didn't show up. The defense looked good and had a bit of a pass rush against Deshaun Watson first week, but that may have been because he was a little rusty more than anything, because they made Blake Bortles look pretty good week two. So, I think not having Edelman out there and not having many weapons, the offense has done pretty well, but obviously if Josh Gordon can stretch the field for them a little, that would be helpful. I don't know. Belichick does not have, for as much of a genius as he gets credit for being, he does not have a good history of receivers coming and fitting in that offense very easily. Obviously, Randy Moss did, but there's not many receivers like Randy Moss out there.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody. I mean, we know there's great talent there with Josh Gordon, but with as many missed games and all the problems he's had, I don't think we're going to be confusing him and voting him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame like we did Randy Moss. I mean, that's just, it's one of the sad parts of his career because he's let so much squander and so much let go. But, you know, a lot of stuff coming out in the Patriots. I know a book has just been done. I think it was by Ian Connor, that former, you know, I'm a colleague from ESPN, and he wrote that it was pretty clear that Tom Brady, at some point this offseason, was really thinking about getting a divorce from Bill Belichick, really. And you can see there was some tension there because, you know, Brady didn't show up at the OTAs. He showed up for the minicamp, but he didn't show for any of the offseason work except for those 3 days in the minicamp. And so, you know, he had then had to put his thoughts aside, saying, okay, I owe it to this team and the players on this team to stay with it. But it really did look like, according to this book, that Brady wanted a separation from Bill Belichick.
I mean, I don't think that's that hard to believe. I think we all can probably see that Belichick's maybe not the easiest guy to work with. I think part of the reason, though, that they've had a lot of success is that he doesn't really, you know, sit around and treat Brady a ton differently and give him a lot of credit. He pretty much treats him the same as everyone else, calls him out on film and everything in their meetings on Mondays. But it's I can see where he would be a tough guy to spend, what, 18 years with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not easy at all. There's no question, because that's something that, you know, because he's not the greatest communicator. He's just the greatest coach. I mean, he knows what to look at.
Yeah, you talked to Ted Johnson about that.
Oh, yeah.
He said that sometimes if you're a guy, you know, obviously not Brady, but a guy like Ted Johnson was, that's more of a role player, you don't know week to week how involved you're going to be in the game before the game starts. And that seems really frustrating as a player.
Yeah, and it's funny because now the Patriots take on Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions. And, you know, Patricia's getting some of the same criticism as far as just, you know, confusion as far as what the time of things are going to be, you know, moving times and trying to shake things up. And, you know, I know that some of the safeties were talking and complaining about that. And so Patricia's off to an 0-2 start. And, you know that Bill Belichick ultimately finds a way to get these things done.
Yeah, speaking of Patricia, anybody that thought that the Seahawks might try to pick up Deshaun Shedd while he was on the street, they have officially re-signed him, the Lions mm-hmm. have.
Yeah, and of course, the reason for that is that Darius Clay is one of, I think, five or six players on the Lions that have are in concussion protocol.
Yeah,
and so Slay right now is being evaluated and did not practice today. And so Shedd came back. And don't you find that a little bit interesting? Because I guess in this tough juncture right now for the Seahawks, where the Seahawks have, you know, been a destination for top defensive players or good defensive players and players that have been around here, that now, players are kind of going elsewhere. I mean, I don't know if they wanted Shedd back. They may or may not have wanted him back. But, I mean, you know, they were nice enough to him to give him what they told him they would do, let him hit free agency this year, because, you know, they could have kept him around at his salary from last year because his contract told, because he wasn't on the active roster long enough. But they cut him and let him go, and he signed with Detroit. And then you have the Tom Johnson thing, which, you know, Tom, and from what I gather on the way that's going to work with the contract, you know, his base salary of $950,000 was guaranteed. Okay, so he gets the first game paycheck of like $37,000, and then he gets cut. And so what he can do then is almost like double dipping. And you can see that, you know, he can, you know, put in for termination pay, which, of course, he's qualified to do with that base guarantee, and he'll get about $838,000 that'll count against next year's cap. It'll be this year's money coming out of next year's cap. And so he'll get that plus the $1 million or so that he got with his contract with the, going over and re-signing with Minnesota. But, you know, here's Tom Johnson basically taking the position. It's like, you know what? Vikings have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. As much as he liked it out here, he's going with the team that's going to have a chance to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, and a team that he's comfortable with because, he's been there. Can't say that I blame him, but it does seem like the Seahawks didn't think that was going to happen.
No, because again, I mean, you can understand the rationale. Their deepest position was defensive tackle. They had five defensive tackles, and they were so deep that they actually had Najir Jones and Puna Ford inactive for the first game. So they went with three defensive tackles in the opener against Denver. And apparently, you know, they needed a spot for Michael Kendricks, and they wanted to make sure they had a spot for special teams because, you know, they had six of their seven players inactive that were injured. And so they needed a special team spot. And so they went to Tom and said, okay, we're going to cut you. My guess is they said, hey, we will try to get you back the next week, so you're not going to lose any money. And, you know, he wasn't going to lose any money because he had the guaranteed base. Well, guess what? Now what happens is that, he leaves and takes the money and gets that and gets back to the Minnesota Vikings at the expense of not coming back here to the Seahawks. And so now their five deep defensive tackle group is down to four with a guy that was going to be their starting three technique over and playing now with the Vikings.
Well, yeah, that didn't go exactly as planned. And then they end up with Shalom Luani back, right? And then didn't use him, which was kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of personnel decisions. I'm not talking John Snyder and that, but decisions during that game that I was still kind of scratching my head. You know, the situation at running back. I mean, you know, special teams, I think that kind of takes care of themselves. But, I mean, you can see that, you know, without Trey Flowers, he was a part of it. And so they had to kind of scramble around to do that. But in the end, it's like now it costs them a defensive tackle. But, you know, hey, that's what's going to happen. And I guess, you know, they've just got to try to make the best of this situation. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, Washington Wednesdays come every Wednesday when we get you ready for the Husky game and get you ready for college football. Jake Heaps will be joining us next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.